Fontes, podcast di cultura pagana del Giorno Pagano Europeo della Memoria. Hello everybody, I am Manuela Simeoni and I welcome you to this new episode of Fontes, the podcast about pagan culture of Radio GPM. This month we talk about the demonization of paganism. The demonization of paganism is the matter we usually talk about in the month of April. As you can read on our blog, its address is http://paganmemoryday.blogspot.com. All site updating have been slowed down since February because of the upcoming renewal of our site. We have finished the graphic part of this renewal, but if you go on our website www.giornopaganomemoria.it, you'll see only the old graphic, because now we are proceeding with the renewal of the contents and the reviewing of the organization of the contest. So you have to be patient a little more. Anyway, Fontes goes on with its episodes. So this month we are going to talk about the demonization of pagan gods in Christian sources. When did this process start? People who claim for an ecumenical dialogue should remember it. The demonization of other people's gods begins in the Bible. So let's consider a passage from the Old Testament and another from the New Testament. I have to say that the passage from the Old Testament brought some trouble to me when I was translating the text of this episode from Italian to English, because in the Italian Bible I have read to prepare this episode of Fontes, the Psalm 95, at verses 4 and 5, said something like that: "Great is the Lord and worth of every praise. He is more frightful than any other god. All gods are useless idols, but the Lord created the skies." This version is an Italian official translation published in 1968 and talks about useless idols. But I would like to know the Hebrew enough to look at the original version of the Psalms. In fact, Augustine from Hippo, in its exposition on the Psalms, and Justin, in his dialogue with Trifo, quote the verse 5 like, "All the gods of the people, which are demons." So we should read the original source. And when I was translating this episode of Fontes in English, I looked for an English version of the Bible online, to avoid translating Bible passages and to present you a passage you may be comfortable with. But both in the International Bible and in a Catholic Bible I found online, this verse says, "For Yahweh is a great God, a king greater than all the gods. In his power are the depths of the earth, the peaks of the mountains are his." So, where are the gods who are useless idols? I don't know. If someone knows or can help me in this matter, please write me at radiogpm@giornopaganomemoria.it. In the New Testament, we find a more clear passage that says, "Simply that when pagans sacrifice, what is sacrificed by them is sacrificed to demons who are not God. I do not want you to share with demons. You cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of the demons as well. You cannot have a share at the Lord's table and the demons' table as well. This is the first letter to the Corinthians, chapter 10, verses 20 and 21. So, the statement of monotheistic religion is clear. The gods of other people are actually demons that deceive men to bring them to perdition. Augustine also said that the gods of other people don't really exist, and we may discuss about how the god as the monotheistic religions conceive him doesn't really exist, but pagan gods are completely different. But this is not the matter of this episode, so let's remain on our track. Augustine said that the gods of other people don't really exist, but demons make human beings believe in the opposite. Augustine explains that the comparison of God with other gods is just a metaphor to explain to the ignorant the power of God that can't be described. But when the Christian needed to depict devils, he didn't choose by chance how to depict them. Christianity deleted the memory about some deities, took some popular feature of others, and turned some of them into devils. So let's look to the classical depiction of the devil, a black being with horns and goat legs, and often a goat head too. Every pagan should recognize in this figure a satyr or the god Pan, who was related to Faunus or the Fauni of the Roman religious world. But why a satyr? Jerome, who translated and commented the Bible, while commenting Isaiah, put in relation the satyrs with the incubi. He translated the Latin word pilosi, found in Isaiah, as incubi or satyrs. The sentence I'm talking about can be found in chapter 13, verse 21, and in Latin is sed requiescent tibi bestiae et replepuntur domus eorum draconibus et habitabunt ibi strutiones et pilosi saltabunt ibi. In English, there the beasts will have their dens, and their houses will be full of snakes. There will live ostriches, and there the pilosi will dance. In my Italian Bible, the word pilosi is still translated with satyrs, while English Bibles prefer the word goats. Literally, pilosi means simply furry, so probably the use of the word goat is a correction, more rational, for Jerome's original idea, to translate the word with satyrs. Jerome links the satyrs to the incubi, like Horace, Quintus Horatius Flaccus. Horace did it in his Epodes, Epodes number 5, verse from 94 to 96. These incubi were minor deities. I don't want to use in this case the word demons because I don't want to create confusion. And the incubi used to sit on the sleeper's chest, causing nightmares, fevers, but also causing that dreams which helped the ill to heal during the practice of the incubation in the temple of Asclepius. So they had a negative side and a positive one, as usual for many pagan gods. Nothing to do with the pilosi, who maybe were wild men or apes, anyway a symptom of the decadence of Babylon struck by the divine rage as described by Isaiah. From the 12th century, the devil is usually depicted as a satyr or Pan, and probably this is also because the Lupercalia, an ancient Roman festival of fertility, survived very long, even though they have lost their deeper religious meaning and the aspect of purification. Since this meaning had gone lost, people celebrating a festival dedicated to a figure, in origin was Faunus, who was half human and half goat, were considered to follow the devil, so the devil became half human and half goat. We should talk about the survival of the Lupercalia and the struggle led by Pope Gelasius I against them in another episode of Fontes. In the 15th century, the demonization is complete. In this century, the witch hunt began. Some witches are still convinced to serve the goddess Diana, as the canon episcopi says, but the inquisitor is sure they serve the devil instead. In the canon episcopi, written at the time of the Franks kings, that is about 8th and 9th century, we read that some women affirmed to go to the gathering of the goddess Diana while dreaming, but the author of the canon was sure this wasn't a real thing, but a deception by the devil. The devil, like an incubus, sent the fake dream to these women, but this was all. People believed that there were women using bad magic, but not these women. The canon episcopi tried to fight against the last residual of paganism, even though this Diana is not the ancient one, but maybe she's only a name which has remained in this woman's mind. According to Margaret Murray, who deals with the matter in The God of the Witches, these women formed a real religious group, practicing a religion known since prehistoric times and worshipping a hornet god who was lately confused with the devil in order to vindicate the persecution on the followers of this old religion. If things had been truly in this way, why would we have met a goddess and then a god, and why wouldn't Christianity immediately have charged these people of casting evil spells? It's almost improbable that the followers of Diana turned into witches worshipping the devil. Witch hunters, too, used to say they weren't persecuting Diana's gatherings, but they were also convinced that the women of the canon was talking about were at the presence of the devil, since the goddess didn't exist. So we could say that the goddess Diana was turned into a demon, or rather, that she was substituted by the devil, because from the 14th century on, the more people talked about other people renouncing to Christ to worship the devil and cast evil spells, the less the name of Diana or of other ancient goddesses has been made. While the Hornet God, a Celtic god of animals, depictions of which have been found in France, in Great Britain, and on Gundestrup cauldron, gave some ideas for the devil's depictions. In fact, in some Irish sculptures and book illumination, the devil has got deer horns. Like other Celtic deities of fertility, the deer horned god was sometimes depicted with three faces. Number three was especially sacred to the Celts. So in their art and religion we find tangles of three colors, groups of three deities, tasks to be done three times, and so on. Did you know that the Lucifer of Dante's Divine Comedy has three faces too? A yellow one representing the wrath, a black one representing ignorance, a red one representing impotence. So, when a god is turned into a devil, we can recognize some ever-present features. The god who has been changed was a fertility god, and usually a male fertility god and the god of sexuality. What the Christians were really demonizing was the happy expression of sexuality, also the feminine sexuality. Augustine from Hippo, in his letter number 91, so writes about the goddess Flora, whose dramatic games are celebrated with a profligacy so utterly dissolute and shameless that anyone may infer from them what kind of demon that must be, which cannot be appeased unless not birds, not quadrupeds, nor even human life, but all greater villainy, human modesty and virtue, perish as sacrifices on her altars. While the gods related to the possession, the enthusiasmus, as the Greeks said, aren't involved in this process of demonization. Nor Dionysus, nor Apollo are usually named. On the contrary, Apollo is named as a metaphor of inspiring poetry. Like him, O good Apollo, for this last labor, make me a vessel worthy of the gift of your beloved laurel, Up to this point, one peak of Mount Parnassus has been enough, but now I need them both in order to confront the struggle that awaits. Enter my breast and breath in me, as when you drew out Marsyas out from the sheathing of his limbs. This passage comes from Dante's Paradise, verses from 13 to 21. I use the Princeton Dante Project translation, about which we have already talked last December. It's not the gods that make Christianity tremble, but human sexuality, like everything that can't be controlled from above. Like the deities Christian took inspiration from to create the images of the devil, gods of the woods, gods of the animals, those gods and goddesses who lived in the forest, which Augustine compares to the city of God. They are the divine embodiment of that nature from which Neoplatonism and idealistic philosophy first had moved away the original paganism, and to which today's paganism is coming back. And for now, that's all. See you next month with another episode of Fontes, the podcast about pagan culture of Radio GPM.